This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson. October 28 gives us episode number 127. Well, just ahead, one chip making company is seeing an end to the global chip shortage. And the lending club is finding that its already very good business is better as a bank. And how a biopharmaceutical company is managing disappointing news from the FDA. Staying focused on a goal of making hyper-personalized therapies, our conversation with Mankind CEO Michael Castagna. An interesting conversation, but you gotta wait, because first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch lists and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
Don't miss an episode of our show. Look at your smart speaker and say, play the Drill Down podcast. Hear our latest episode.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com. That's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
Well, let's get to it. I'm Corey Johnson. This is the Drill Down. We've got business news. We've got stocks behind those, above those stories. I guess the business news is underneath.
Stocks, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
A little layer on the top. The business is what matters, not the
frosting.
Sure. I was going to go with the epidermal matter.
Ooh.
It's a Bright Ledge Big City reference. Here we are with the three most important business stories of the day from Isaac Webster.
Corey, let's start with the Facebook in the room. Facebook is changing its corporate name to Meta as it focuses on digital realms known as the metaverse. The social media service will retain the Facebook name, but the company will be called Meta and is already investing heavily in creating shared online spaces inhabited by digital avatars, with projects ranging from virtual reality glasses to e-commerce platform. On December 1st, the company's shares will start trading under the stock symbol MVRS.
Huh. I wonder if they're going to change their name to Ron Artest. Because, you know, he went from Ron Artest to Meta World Peace.
Wow. People are going to have to Google that. Number two, the U.S. economy slowed in the third quarter. That's thanks to the surge in the Delta variant that I personally caught, and a supply crunch. Also, factors that fueled spending faded. That includes the infusion of government stimulus, business reopenings, and rising vaccination rates. The U.S. Commerce Department said GDP grew at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 2.0% from July to September, marking the weakest quarter of growth since the recovery began in mid-2020.
And don't get your situation into a twist here, people. When this is the annual rate at the current rate would be 2%.
Right. Yeah.
The annual rate before at an earlier rate was over 7%, but that didn't mean we were growing at 7%. It just means if you were annualize the current rate, it's just one quarter, but 2%, not super strong.
Exactly.
Delta is real.
Exactly. And finally, Activision Blizzard, its CEO, Bobby Kotick. Is it Kotick or Kotick?
Kotick.
Kotick. So CEO Bobby Kotick is
Bobby
reducing
forever.
His... What's that? Sorry.
I've known Bobby forever.
He's have
everyone's
you?
Everyone's okay. Cup of tea. I love the guy. I really do.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got your personal views out there. So Bobby is reducing his salary and pledging changes amid probes into the company's culture. The video game publisher will end mandatory arbitration for sexual harassment and discrimination claims. The changes are aimed at making Activision Blizzard more diverse and safer for employees. Kotick was the second highest paid chief executive nationwide, earning $154 million in 2020, according to the Wall Street Journal ranking. Kotick asked Activision's board to reduce his salary to the minimum allowed under California law for salaried workers, which is $62,500, and said that he would forgo bonuses and equity grants.
More importantly, right?
Yeah.
His salary wasn't his salary. His salary was the equity grants. And he's still a substantial shareholder and has been, but taking it on the chin there.
Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
We've been talking a lot about semiconductors. What a great day to look at Ultra Clean Holdings.
Ultra Clean Holdings trades under UCTT. Shares jumped 19% today, and they've climbed 136% over the past 12 months.
Used to be the covering technology meant you were covering semiconductors and software and computers. And as technology has moved, what they say, up the stack into actual things that people do, now covering technology means Facebook and Airbnb or things that are, you know, cars, right?
More consumer facing.
Yeah, and exactly. And so, but I have spent, because I'm old, I've spent a lot of time, my technology years covering things like semiconductors and the companies that make semiconductors and the companies that make the things that make semiconductors and the companies that make the things that make the things that make the semiconductors. And that is what Ultra Clean Holdings does. They make the things the companies like Applied Materials use. Indeed, Applied Materials is the biggest customer for Ultra Clean Holdings. They announced a quarter today that was spectacular. Revenues up 52% year over year, just in 13 weeks, $554 million in revenues. Their margins, great, 12.5%, 12.4% with profits of $49 million. And, you know, maybe most interestingly, these guys said, and then their CEO, Jim Scholhamer, said, yeah, supply chain issues are real, but they're manageable and maybe they're going to get better like during the fourth quarter, which, by the way, is now, or maybe first quarter of next year. But he really sees things getting better. Here's Jim Scholhamer, CEO of Ultra Clean Holdings.
Yeah, I mean, the supply chain issues are affecting everyone, you know, even, you know, our peers, our customers. Everyone's working through those issues, so that's nothing new. I don't think it typically is more of an inconvenience or a nuisance of delaying, you know, shipments, you know, a few weeks. It tends not to be a dramatic change, but I think it's kind of stabilized at the level where you still have to work it pretty hard to get what you need to get out close to the date that the customer needs. But I don't think it's getting any worse. And I think eventually it should start getting better, you know, maybe in the fourth quarter, or the first quarter of next year.
Again, that's kind of interesting, I think, from someone who ought to know, because he really is on the cutting edge of what's happening in the semiconductor world. Probably good news for everybody.
Yeah, I bet everyone's being like, yes, thank you. Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at the Lending Club.
Lending Club trades under LC. Shares climbed 33% today, and they've gained 832% in a year.
Oh, my goodness. Remember our interview with the Lending Club CEO with Scott
Sandberg?
Oh, very
well. Yeah, I think interview. All these gains are because of our interview.
I think that I do think, honestly, we don't do stock recommendations. We don't tell you how to invest. We don't have any investments in Lending Club, but you know, fantastic run of this company because they're doing things right. And you heard that in our interview with Scott. I'm not going to replay that. I'm going to play what he had to say today after just a fantastic earnings report, Q3 earnings and revenues. Super strong net interest income because these guys are in the lending business. Went from $46 million a year ago in this quarter to $65 million. Loan originations, they think for this year, are going to be more like $10.2 billion. Just a really strong quarter from this company. Even their marketplace business, $175 million in revenue, up about $25 million from a year before. So, and deposits getting better. And one of the interesting things here, as you may recall, Isaac, we talked a lot about when we talked to Scott Sanborn, the CEO, about why buy a bank. They bought a bank called Radius Bank, and it's going to allow them to offer different kinds of products, offer those products through a bank, have a lower cost of capital. And Scott Sanborn says this is kind of just the beginning. They're going to start to move everything through that bank, and it's going to happen real soon.
The first priority this year is pulling our lending products into the banking infrastructure, because that both gives us cost efficiencies, it gives us incremental revenue, and it allows us to leverage the full power of our platform, our data science platform, servicing platform, our payments, all of the things we do to drive loan performance. But as we look into next year, we'll come back and talk about, we see over time, a broad range of products helping our customers manage their lending, spending, and savings.
So it's just getting started. And, as you mentioned, the market reacting to these results, but we heard about it in this interview with him. Go back to your podcast app, listeners, and check that out, because it was a great interview, I thought, and it really did talk about kind of the progress these guys are making.
Corey, what's your next drill down?
Well, you talked about GDP, and you talked about this 2% GDP, and I thought it'd be good to look at a manufacturing company that was really kind of seeing what was going on in the world. And indeed, Proto Labs results today suggested that things weren't going great.
Proto Labs, you're going to have to tell me what this company does. I can guess, but it trades under PRLB. Shares fell 20% today, and they've lost 50% in a year.
Yeah, this is a $4 billion company a year ago. Now it's about half that. I'm not good at math, but it's under $2 billion. Maybe you don't have to be good at math to know that.
I don't think you have to be good at math.
Maybe I should say really stupid things about math and say, you know, I'm really good at math. Half of $4 billion is $2 billion, I think, more or less. Okay.
Right.
The company's based in Maple Plain, Minnesota. It was fun to listen to all those nice Minnesota accents on the conference call, both the analysts and the management, Proto Labs, this morning. They reported $4.8 million in profits off of sales of $125 million. So a bunch of things go. So these guys, what do they do? Injection molding, CNC machining, a little bit of 3D printing, sheet metal. This is really like kind of basic stuff, getting manufacturing things ready to be manufactured. CEO resigned at the end of last year, and a new CEO came in March. And here we are, not 6 months later, the business is in trouble. So here's one easy way to look at it. Lots more revenues, 16% more revenues than a year ago, lots less profit. They had 16% increase in revenues, and the profit fell dramatically. Their operating margins went from 16% a year ago to 5.5% this quarter. So just weak, and it's the opposite of what we talked about. Remember, we talked about Spotify yesterday. We talked about how Daniel Ek says, do lots of things fast, ship lots of product quickly, make changes quickly, because if they don't work, you can quickly undo them. Whereas if you rely on very slow, massive product changes, and they aren't right, it really hurts the company. Well, this company, Proto Labs, went with their new version of their work, 2.0, they call it, and 2.0 just isn't working. The efficacy isn't there. The efficiency isn't there, and it's just crushed them. Listen to CEO Robert Porter.
You know, we launched 2.0 earlier in the year, and you know, we expected that there would be things that we'd have to work through with a large systems launch like that, both for customers to adapt to using the new system and for our employees to adapt to using the new system. And that's what we saw, and we worked through that, and with customers it worked very well, and you know, they're very happy with it now. With employees, we made headwind, but we're seeing some of those inefficiencies persist. And so that's a real focus for us now, as you know, we've changed some of the workflows for our employees. And in some cases, those workflows are less automated than they were in 1.0. So we're addressing that head on. We're working with the business leaders in those areas and the subject matter experts. We've identified the areas and the workflows where those inefficiencies remain, and we're targeting our software teams specifically to address those to drive those improvements.
They've literally come up with an innovation called 2.0 that uses more human labor, less software, less automation. And now they're like, that wasn't a good idea.
Whoops.
That's why the stock got wrecked. All right, coming up, we've got a really interesting conversation with a company that's a real turnaround story in the drug industry, with some interesting delivery platforms, some novel new therapies coming on. And it's a good lesson in how to take a company that's running out of cash, try to find somewhere to grow while you're trying to keep the lights on. Mankind CEO Michael Castagna joins us right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Braintrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Braintrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit Braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down Podcast. I'm joined right now by Michael Castagna. He's the CEO of Mankind. I'm trying to say it's got two N's. I'm trying to say man, but it brings up my upstate New York Rochester accent that I've worked so hard to get rid of. Mankind. Mankind does what, Michael?
So we have an inhaled therapeutics platform to deliver drugs into the lungs, which will be convenient over the next couple of years given COVID. But today we deliver inhaled insulin. So it's a product that's been approved by the FDA a few years ago. And we market currently in the U.S. and through a partner in Brazil, and we'll be going international over the next couple of years. So that's our main product. And we have a second product that was recently reviewed by the FDA that will hopefully be coming out next year, a product called Tyvaso DPI with a partner, United Therapeutics, and that's for a rare disease called pulmonary hypertension. And that impacts about 40,000 people here in the U.S.
Yeah, so let's take these separately. So Afrezza, is that what you call it? Afrezza inhalation powder. Which is the insulin?
Yep.
Tell me about that business. What? How big is that business? Why inhaler instead of other ways to get insulin?
Yeah. So when you think about the diabetes market, it's about 500 million people across the world, and about 32 million just in the U.S. alone. And then of the 32 million people who have diabetes, about 5-6 million are on insulin. So your body basically, most people will progress to a point where they need insulin at the end stages, but some people are diagnosed at an early age called type 1 diabetes, and they don't have insulin from like probably 7 to 10 years old all the way for the rest of their life. And so they got to supplement every time they eat. They have to supplement a mealtime insulin, and then there's a basal insulin. We are the mealtime insulin. So, and that's been, insulin's been around for 100 years. It's been a very difficult product because it just the injectables don't work as fast as people would like, and it's hard to match your food and your timing. And that's a lot of what we solved for in the inhaled therapeutic space is we were able to make it every time you eat, you just inhale when you eat. You don't have to guess when you're going to eat and when your food's going to show up. And then if your sugars are still high an hour later, you can take another dose and keep really tight sugar control. And there's a new technology that's being used called continuing glucose monitoring.
Right.
So you used to see people stick their fingers and push the blood out. Now they just wear a quarter size sensor on their arm, and it tells you on your iPhone or your reader what's going on every 5 minutes. So
you can see where you stand with your sugar level, and you can see your intake, and then with your product you can take it with ease. You don't have to shoot up.
Yeah.
And time it.
So you're not worried about carrying your injectable insulin. You're not worried about you can literally carry a couple of pods in your pocket and or your purse and have your insulin on demand whenever you need it.
Now, you mentioned that these symptoms can show up when you're 7 years old. Just to be clear, you're not approved right now for
So we're approved for adults 18 and above. We actually just started our pediatric trial last month, and we got a couple sites up and running and some kids already enrolling. So that's exciting as well.
And how big is that business? I don't mean to be crass by describing it as a business, but this is a business. How big is that business?
How big is the insulin market?
It's huge, right?
It's sadly
growing.
Yeah, it's the insulin market in the U.S. actually flattened out a little bit because of the new drugs launching in type 2 has delayed the need for insulin, but people eventually are going to still need insulin. So if anything, we're probably just going to see people progressing worse and worse who need insulin. But the market in the U.S. is probably well over $10 billion from just a market size. There's about, in the market that we target, there's about 300,000 patients a week filling prescriptions for insulin. So call it about 1.5 million consumers a month. Filling the prescription, some get 90 days, some get 30 day supply, but quite a few consumers every week. And when you think about we're approaching 1,000 patients a week, there's nothing but unlimited upside from where we sit today to help patients.
And yet you're only doing $75 million in trailing revenues for the last year. What's the key to growth there?
Yeah, the key to growth for us is continuing to educate the marketplace. So a lot of people don't think about mealtime insulin control. They don't understand the challenges because there's really nobody marketing mealtime insulin besides us. So it's a rather large category, but it's an established category. It's built on habits that have been trained down 100 years, and we're the disruptor. So when you think about, I hate to say like Tesla, but when Tesla came in with the electric car and they didn't have battery stations, they didn't have auto body shops, they didn't have service centers, they really had to go out and build that infrastructure to help support the electric car adoption. And now you look 10 years later and, you know, you got Hertz buying 100,000 electric cars this week. So I think the same is true with inhaled insulin. You know, we're throwing out 100 years of habit, just like the gas-powered car. You have to think about your insulin ratio differently. You don't count carbs anymore. You're just guesstimating a dose close enough to your meal, and you're not guessing all this timing. So you fundamentally, it's easier in some ways, but to some people it's more complex because, like, what do you mean? I've been doing all this math and all this complex for 20, 30 years. And we're saying, no. Now you just got a guesstimated dose, 4, 8, or 12. And if you need higher, just take another 4. And we've taken a lot of that guesswork out. And that's really mind-boggling to people, believe it or not. And so, you're changing someone's habit, and they said, well, I don't understand how that can happen, that I'm less accurate in my dosing, but I actually get equal or better control. And I think depending on our studies, we can show you, you get equal or better control or less hypoglycemia, and which is hypoglycemia is what happens when you get too much insulin, you go low,
right,
and you really feel like crap. And that's the number one side effect of insulin. And we reduce that side effect significantly.
And yet that's probably not why you've got a $1.3 billion market cap. It's really about the orphan lung diseases, the other things that you're pursuing that seems to have led the speculation of your stock. We don't care about stocks in this show, really. We really care about the business and how the business works. But talk to me about the orphan lung diseases that you're going after, and why, of all the things you could do, sounds like you know about electric cars, why not do that? But why orphan lung diseases?
Yeah, so for me, I'm a pharmacist by training, and so I love healthcare. I've been doing this 25 years and mainly do turnarounds. And to your point, I came to MannKind because Afrezza didn't launch well, and I wanted to turn around and get it back on the right track. And that turned into a bunch of other headaches. So from a business perspective, the company was in a really bad capital situation, didn't have enough cash to get through 2 quarters, and had a lot of debt due. So there was a lot of capital constraints in the company that prevented us from turning it around faster or getting as much progress as we wanted. And we really, took some bets over that time period. And one of them was understanding that, look, when you're disrupting a marketplace like diabetes, you either have to have like $1 billion to go spend at once and blow it up, or you're changing over time. And this is going to take time, like going to the kids and changing the standard of care and getting guidelines updated. That stuff just takes time and data. And we're now generating those things. So Afrezza is well on its way to success. And I think
standard of care, to be clear, for those who don't spend a lot of time in doctor's offices, and I hope you don't, if you're listening right now, but it's when the doctor, it's basically the part that the doctor doesn't have to think. Here's what we, patient with this thing, we give them that thing. And that's the standard of care. And to get them to change the standard of care usually involves a lot of data, a lot of studies, and a lot of sort of, there's this other thing. We always thought this would work. We just didn't have the data.
Right. And then they need evidence and you got to publish the data, and that just takes time. So I think Afrezza is now on its way. We got a good, patent life for the next 15 plus years. So we'll be in a good spot on making sure Afrezza, does well in the company and helps patients. But in the meantime, we pivoted our efforts about 3 or 4 years ago. When I became CEO, the question was, do you spend more on R&D or more on Afrezza? And because we really felt Afrezza was going to take a lot more money and a lot more time, no matter how much money we had, we pivoted a little bit, invested in R&D. And so we decided that our technology would best help patients who had lung disease.
And that's the delivery technology, the technology of an inhaler, basically?
Yeah. So our your lungs are half the size of a tennis court. And people don't think about the lung to deliver therapeutic products like prescription drugs, not the ones that we get on the streets. But the lungs, take a lot of abuse, whether it's because people smoke or they vape or they do whatever. You get your oxygen every day. So the lungs are an incredible delivery of opportunity that was underappreciated. And so we took the opportunity, and inhaled insulin was one of the first times you delivered a non-lung disease treatment into the lung as a delivery mechanism. But we also felt there's a lot of lung conditions that just don't get good therapeutic options because they just can't penetrate the lung in a good way. And we felt that's where our technology would be best served to help patients and drive a big difference in society. And so one of those first targets was this rare disease called pulmonary hypertension. And what you think about is high blood pressure in your lungs, shortness of breath. People life expectancy, I think, is like 5 years from diagnosis. So not a very long expectancy from when you get this disease. And now it's much longer today than it was 20 years ago. And so people are living longer lives. But this is a very challenging disease. These people are hooked to nebulizers, IV infusion sets. They really can't get out of their house. They can't go very far. And they run into shortness of breath very quickly. So being able to make our technology, carry around with them and get them out of the house and get them to be able to give better efficacy than the better results, I'll say, for the average person. Better results than what they were doing is what we're focused on. And so in 3 weeks, we were able to take people off their old drug and put them on our technology and improve their life in 3 weeks.
And this improves them. What's the old drug? These are orphan drugs, I thought.
Yeah, so the old drug diseases, is the one we're replacing. It's called
Tyvaso. We should back up a 30,000-foot view, sorry. An orphan disease is what?
An orphan disease is a disease that impacts a limited number of people. I think it's generally less than 200,000 or 500,000 people in the country. And so they really, the FDA gives special categorization and special exclusivity to companies who invest in orphan diseases.
And again, these are diseases that also that there is, for which there is no treatment right now.
There are no treatments. And so these patients would have no alternatives, and it's been a really successful program. And so this disease had its first drug approved back in 1998, if I recall, 23 years ago. And that was Tyvaso, treprostinil. And that's the ingredient in this product that we make, that we just finally, after 23 years, transformed into a dry powder that delivers it into the lung and gets a really good, nice penetration. And so that's really the opportunity here. Is this orphan disease impacts about 45,000 people here in the U.S. And then there's additional people outside the U.S., but they're also going after new indications. Another one called interstitial lung disease. It's another, I'll call 50,000 patients. And then there's COPD, PH, which is another 100,000 patients, and then IPF. So there's like another, we're taking a disease that currently the drug cheats 3,000 to 5,000 patients. And if all goes well over the next 3-4 years, it'd be open up to 50,000 to 100,000 patients. And that's really exciting to be able to help that many more people.
Can you take me into don't take me to the chemistry, because my chemistry grades are not going to get us there. But can you kind of metaphorically explain how it works?
The technology or the drug?
The drug. Well, both.
Yeah. So there are lots of drugs that have been approved that, sometimes the dosing, when you take it in a tablet form, it causes drug interactions in your body or causes GI sickness. Certain drugs do these types of things. When you put them directly into the lung, you bypass that metabolism in this gut. And when you do that, you actually sometimes don't need as much drug. So therefore, you're giving less product, which means you're hopefully going to get less side effects. And in this case, you're delivered directly to the lung, which means hopefully you're getting better outcomes, because you're putting the drug directly into the lung.
So it doesn't get to the bloodstream. It doesn't go through the stomach, where, as you mentioned, the bacteria destroys most foreign objects, and that's what they have, foreign enzymes and so on.
So, and when it does go through the lung, it still gets into the bloodstream. Remember, your oxygen goes across your lungs and gets into your blood. So what you want to do is hopefully you get less of it in your bloodstream and more of it treating the local effect of the lung. And even if it goes in the blood's circulating through the lungs constantly, and you hopefully still get good levels there. But you don't want drugs laying around forever, right? So it's important to do an effect, hopefully last a little bit while. Like, you take this drug 4 times a day. So, you want it to get in there, resolve your symptoms, and then hopefully you're good for 4 or 5 hours, and then your symptoms start to come back. You take another dose, and you're good for the next 4 to 5 hours. But this is a chronic disease where basically every 4 or 5 hours you need to give yourself a treatment, or 6 hours.
And is the delivery system just an inhaler, or is there something unique about it?
Yeah, no, it's a very simple inhaler. So, because we're on video, you can see it, but it's about the size of a finger, right? A little smaller than my thumb.
For our listeners, he's showing me something that's the size of a finger, but he just said that. So, yeah. So it's a plastic device about the size of it. Looks like a thumb, even.
Yep. There you go.
And you inhale that.
Yep. So you put this. So you get a little cartridge in.
So there's no nebulizer or anything like that.
No nebulizer. So you looking for a cartridge? Go figure.
Because I know a company that sells the cartridges, if you're looking, Michael.
Yep. So we make these little cartridges. Mankind.
Okay. So the cartridge, I'm going to try to describe this. It looks like just like a little piece of a Lego.
Yep.
You attach to a thumb-sized piece. See, I do this for a living. They actually get paid. Well, I don't really get paid, but this isn't what I do for a living, nonetheless. So
you put the little cartridge in.
You snap that little Lego in there. You breathe through the thing. And hopefully you didn't just inject yourself with some drug for the benefit of our listeners.
I probably did inhale some drug, but I'll be fine.
So then how does the drug itself work? If we can go into metaphors that don't include Legos.
Yeah, so they're called prostacyclins. I'm not the scientific expert on prostacyclins. Our partner is. But basically, like, when you have high blood pressure, right, you want to dilate the blood vessels. Basically, you have high blood pressure in your lungs, and you want to be able to dilate the lung blood vessels so they're not constricted. because that's, you literally feel shortness of breath, right? And I think that's really what you're trying to do, is resolve that high blood pressure going into your lungs and delivering that target there.
Interesting. So it really just opens up, you described it as the tennis court. The tennis court unfolds and it, you're able to suddenly
breathe again.
Breathe again, which is a good thing. Breathing. I'm all for it. You mentioned your partner, United Therapeutics. What is that relationship? Why did you enter into it? And what does it give you that you wouldn't have without them?
Yeah, you know, in retrospect, it worked out better than anyone could have imagined. We had developed this product knowing that there were three partners or ourselves who could bring it to market. And of those partners, United Therapeutics built this marketplace. They're the market leader, they're the innovator. And Martine, who's the CEO there, is an incredible person.
Oh my God. And she is
an amazing person.
Just an amazing, just, like there is no, she is one of one. She's one of the most impressive people in the world that I've ever met or ever heard of. She's incredible.
So I've been privileged to get to know them, get to know her personally. They've just been a great team and a great partner to us. But Martine, for those who don't know, her daughter got diagnosed with this disease and she wound up founding a company to save her own daughter's life. And it worked out well. And when you talked about our company name, Mankind, it's named after Alfred E. Mann, who was a founder who built 17 different companies over his lifetime, including the insulin pump that's now Medtronic, the cochlear implant, the pacemaker. So a ton of innovation. But one of the things Al Mann did back in 1998 was license Martine, the insulin pump, for her particular treprostinil. And so when I had called United Therapeutics to license this product to see if there was interest, Martine flew out here literally 3 weeks later and we talked about it. And she told me a story about Al Mann and how Al Mann licensed her to pump to save her daughter's life. And she loved our technology. She loved Al Mann and felt that if Al Mann's behind this and our founder put $1 billion of his own money in this company, that if he's behind it, it's got to work and it's got to be great. And we got to get this together. And we wound up signing this deal 3 years ago, 20 years to the date that she originally licensed the first pump from Al Mann. So a really good story, a really good feel-good story about helping patients and making a difference in society. And really our founder having helped her twice, right, transform United Therapeutics, I think is even more of an amazing story that you couldn't make this up. Like it just happened to come together nicely.
We have got to get Martine Rothblatt on this show. She also, of course, took Sirius Satellite Radio public in 1993 and then switches to biotech to save her daughter's life. Just an incredible story.
Yeah, and they told her, how do you get a satellite in space? You build a bigger rocket. They said, the rockets aren't big enough. Well, her solution was build a bigger rocket. it's just, she thinks very differently than anyone else in the world I've ever met. And I really have been challenged by her, which has been great.
So where are you in terms of getting this to market?
So this product, unfortunately, we were supposed to be talking, it was supposed to be approved about a week and a half ago. And the FDA decided to wait a little longer, unfortunately, for patients. And so we had a little bit of a delay, but that delay is minor in the grand scheme of the next 15, 20 years. We want to get this to patients as soon as possible. This product really did make a difference in our lives in 3 weeks, and it was held up over something really minor that we think is resolvable, and we should be able to get this product on the market early next year. So.
And what is the thing the FDA has held it up for, and what's the resolution?
You know, for your average listener, if you had a mall, and let's say you owned Macy's in the mall, and there's nothing wrong with Macy's, but the parking lot outside had a fallen light, the FDA said the fallen light, I had to stop anything else from going to the Macy's because there's a light that fell in the parking lot. And until you fix that light, I can't approve it out of that. I can't approve anything else to go in the Macy's. So it had nothing to do with Macy's, right? When you think about that, like our drug is fine. Our quality of our product's fine. Everything about our product's fine. There's a third party who does testing on the product.
Right.
And that third party has an issue that was unrelated to our product. And it's a fallen light, like literally not that, but like manufacturing wise.
They're suggesting that the testing wasn't accurate or that these guys can't perform
good tests. Our testing was fine. It had something to do with somewhere else in the plant with nothing to do with our product. There's a whole other product line and a whole other company. But this third party does manufacturing for all kinds of drug companies. And they have something called an OAI. And it's an outstanding issue with the FDA. And until that's resolved, the FDA won't approve a new drug out of that facility. So there's two ways you resolve it. You get them to go back and inspect and fix the issue. Or you move the testing to your own facility and get it redone and resubmitted. And that's what UT is doing. United Therapeutics is now moving that test back to themselves and they will submit the testing back to the FDA and get this resolved pretty quickly.
Well, it's a fascinating company and we're glad for all Mankind that you brought Mankind to us. It's the last time I make that joke. Michael Castagna, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. When the drill down continues, we will have one number that tells us a whole lot more about mankind when the drill down continues.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription, event intelligence, and more. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to The Drill Down on your smart speaker by saying something. For example, if it's an Amazon Alexa, say, Alexa, play The Drill Down podcast. You can hear our latest show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with The Drill Down. Bite that one number that tells us a whole lot. Isaac, remember when I made fun of you for not being able to count to three?
No.
Okay, let me make fun. I can't go back and make fun of you again. If I give a range, is that one number that means a lot? It's not?
No, I don't think so.
So what if I pick the midpoint of that range as the drill down bite, that one number that tells us a lot about mankind?
Okay. I'm listening.
All right, no, I'll give you a better number.
All right.
All right, Frezza, we were talking about that. That's the ultra... rapid acting insulin, the breathable insulin.
Right.
Well, according to the CDC, there are 34.2 million people. There's a number, 34.2 million. 34.2 million people in the United States with diabetes.
Wow.
As of 2018. That's a huge market. It's sad. 34.2 million people.
It's a sad, huge market. Yeah.
And there we have it. That's the drill and bite, the number one number that has told us so very much about the market opportunity for mankind for their insulin inhalation powder. You've been listening to The Drill Down. I'm Corey Johnson. Isaac Webster's our executive producer. Ben Wilson is our editor extraordinaire. As I mentioned yesterday, the dog you're about to hear in the background, Nikita. The cow, however, does not have a name. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network. We'll